My name is Kazuo Chiba, a former Japanese diplomat. I would like to talk to you about the Japanese emperor and what is purported to have been the worship of the emperor as a deity. I was born in 1925. As a child, I was fortunate to be in a school where imperial princes and princesses and members of the aristocracy did study. I was not an aristocrat myself, but my grandfather had been. So I had the extraordinary privilege of actually seeing the Emperor Hirohito when he used to come very infrequently to our school, and I even heard him speak. Most of the Japanese never, of course, saw him. Only his photographs were displayed with great reverence. So when there was a fire, those photos, which are supposed to be very precious, were carried out even before other items. In those days, of course, there was a hierarchy among the people, so the emperor at the top. And there's a whole system of showing respect, like bowing. So the emperor was accorded the supreme and the deepest bow, and people were not supposed to look at his face. But in our school, which was a special one, where he gazed upon the imperial countenance, and as a youngish man in those days, he was quite good-looking. Although I remember his voice was not a very deep voice, but I think I was extremely privileged for a Japanese to have that experience. And of course, like all my friends, and indeed most Japanese who had never even seen him, we didn't feel that we were in the presence of a god, but we felt that we were in the presence of somebody very high in our esteem. At that time, the entire Japanese system was based on the European modern setup, which we had imported in the late 1860s, early 1870s, and it comprised a lot of rationalism. Otherwise, we could not have had factories or modern armed forces and so forth. But it also depended not on Christianity as in the West, but on our traditional values and the ways of feeling, including the religion, which could be said to be, after all, a sort of nature worship. So we had a sort of a dualism there, traditional feelings plus Western rationalism. So from both views, the emperor satisfied me. He was a very awesome being in the sense of our traditions, but also he's a very fine-looking man from the rational point of view as well. So we went to war, which was a terrible time for all of us. We had to fall back on our innermost mental resources based on our tradition. And finally, when the war ended, we learned that the emperor himself had ordered the surrender because he did not want more Japanese to be killed. We had been fighting in his name, and we were quite prepared to give up our lives, not for him, but for the nation. Nevertheless, he was the symbol of the nation. So when we learned that he himself had ordered the surrender, all desire to fight left us. Now, later on, after that, the entire Japanese nation, including myself, had a very hard time trying to live because all our resources were shattered by the war. But in 1946, a few months after the surrender, we learned that the emperor had given up his divinity. At that time, I felt very happy because the modern Japanese was then and still is a mixture of the rational Western, what we have learned from the West, and our long traditions, which of course contain lots of irrational elements. So when I learned that the emperor had given up the irrational part of his existence, I was very happy because I thought that the barriers which separated the emperor from the people were now down, and that we had now found a point to rally around to restore a shattered nation and to at least provide a decent living for our people. The emperor died in 1989. I never felt that we had lost a god. I felt we had lost a superb human being who had shared the dichotomy of the Western-style rational and the ancient traditional in our mental makeup.